I'm hoping to get your feedback on a very important question. What's your why? I was asked that question a number of years ago, and I've never forgotten it. It still informs my journey. Very often when I'm not seeing the results I want, I'll step back at points. And in moments of introspection, I'll ask that question, Ryan, what's your why? It keeps you sometimes when you don't see results, or you need to be reminded of the reason you got into maybe a particular vocation, service, or you undertook a goal and you need to make sense of it. What's your why? Please share with me your whys in the comments, on the YouTube channel, on the podcast app. Please share with me your reasons for doing what you're doing, whether it's your vocation, whether it's a passion, a hobby. What's your why, I think, informs and helps us to wrestle through the tensions. And my guest today joins to share her why. She's, in fact, the first lady of my family. Her name is Christine Sharp. Born and raised in the Bronx, she's an educator, a mother, and very passionate about her work and her service. And we're joined by a special co-host. I call her the creative director of the What a Word podcast. And she's my daughter, Talia Sharp. And she joins us to share in a conversation with Christine Sharp, her mom, and my wife. And this was initially done for a project Christine was working on, and I asked her permission to share it with listeners and viewers, and I believe you will be inspired by it. Thank you, as always, for joining us. Blessings.
You are listening to the What a Word podcast, an interview-style podcast where guests bring their unique experiences and insight on culture, life's challenges, and faith. Each episode is seasoned with words which will inspire and encourage. Now here is your host, Ryan Sharp.
Welcome to the What a Word podcast. My guest today is my wife and teacher, Christine Sharp. She has had an impact on the lives of her students. I'm joined today by my guest host, my daughter, Talia Sharp, who will introduce further our guest.
Christine Sharp is my mother and also my first teacher. Welcome.
Thank you, Talia. Thank you, Ryan.
So, Christine, tell us about your roots.
So I was born and raised in Bronx, New York by parents who were immigrants from the West Indies, the beautiful island of Jamaica. Both of them came here in an effort to have a better future for their children, as well as to aid with with their siblings and their parents back home in Jamaica.
So, in your early years, did you have a favorable impression of any of your teachers?
Well, I actually did not. I did not like school. I did not have any teachers who I thought liked me. And so because of that, I was a behavior problem in most of my classes, I would say until fifth grade. In fifth grade, I had a teacher who I will forever be indebted to. She showed tremendous interest in me and advocated for me. And definitely, I began to see teachers from a different lens because of her.
Okay. With all the career choices you were exposed to, why did you choose teaching?
That's a serious question, Talia, because I don't know if I chose teaching or if teaching chose me as orchestrated by God. And I say that because I was pre-med in college and was headed to medical school until I came across this beautiful class called organic chemistry. And it was giving me a warm time, to say the least. And I made it through organic chemistry 1, And now it was time for organic chemistry two. And I sat there the first day of class and I swore someone had abducted the teacher and placed someone who was speaking in Arabic. And I didn't know what he was saying. And I was like, there's no way I'm not passing this class. And so I walked out. I picked up my books and I was like, I'll take this class next semester. I'm not passing it. And when I went to the computer to drop the class, a friend of mine was there. He was like, hey, Christine, what you doing here? And I was like, well, I'm dropping this organic chemistry class and I need a class to take in replacement. And he was like, you've never taken a class with me. We've never been in class together, have we? And I was like, nope. And he was like, well, I'm taking this education class. Take it with me. Let's have fun together. And I was like, okay, I'll take the class. And the class was interesting, but that's still not what changed my career. It was the teacher asked for us to volunteer to tutor at a nearby elementary school. And while we were there, you know, I worked with this little boy. He's the cutest little thing. He was just so cute. He was just so round with these big cheeks and these big eyes. And just the cutest little thing I'd ever met. And after the semester was over, they had like this beautiful graduation ceremony where they gave them certificates for all their improvement throughout the semester. And he looked at me and he said, I'm so glad you came. And I was like, what do you mean by it? He said, Christine, if you didn't come, I would have never learned how to read. I like school now. And it's all because you came and tutored me. And that like did something to me, kind of was like, you know what, maybe I do love children. Maybe I don't have to be a pediatrician. Maybe I can be a teacher. And so I started taking more education classes for my undergrad. And then, yeah, here I am. I am a teacher and I absolutely love it. I cannot imagine myself doing anything else other than standing before children. So I was trying.
Quite the story.
Thank you.
So which teacher of yours influenced you the most?
Okay, so this is a good one. I'm going to name four individuals, probably not all conventional teachers in the word of teaching. And one is going to seem very, very strange because he was very negative, but yet he still impacted me. So the first one, as I spoke before, would be my fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Barron, and I'll try to be quick. She impacted me because I love acting when I was younger and I wanted to be the school. Every year I did this big play and I wanted to be in a play. So I went to tryouts. And I tried out and they told me I couldn't do it. I was like, I don't get it. Why? And they said, because this is a musical and you can't sing. You're tone deaf. That's what they told me, a 10-year-old. How rude. Like, I cannot believe people speak to kids like that. I didn't even know what tone deaf meant. All I heard was that I couldn't. And I was angry. So I got back to class and I'm, you know, not ashamed to say it. I trashed her classroom. I threw chairs. I threw desks. I threw down my book bag. I was angry. And she was like, what is, you know, wrong with you? And when lunch came, she made me stay up for detention. And I told her, I said, I wanted to be in a play. And they said, I can't be in a play because I can't sing. And she said, you want to act in a play? And I said, yes, I want to be in a play and I want to be the star of the play. And she said, okay. And she came out to school the next day and she, I don't know if she wrote the play. I don't know if she found it. I don't know. But she came back with a play the next day and she's like, we're going to do a class play and you have the lead role. And I was so excited. I had like 100-something lines. I memorized all of them in one night because I was just so excited to finally have the chance to do something I love. So that was my fifth grade teacher. And then she just invested in me. All behavior programs ended. I became citizen of the month. I made honor roll for the rest of the school year. Like I just became a model student because of that one act where she did that for me. So I'm going to do the positive influences first. Then the next person would be, I lied about the number, would be a guidance counselor in middle school. She just saw something in me and she enrolled me in a program. And it was, the Upward Bound program and the Northeastern Consortia program. And that program allowed me the opportunity to go away to different colleges every summer and just get better exposure. that program also introduced me to Michelle Danvers. That's the next influential person. So she wasn't a teacher of mine, but she was the coordinator of the Upward Bound program. And she became, for me, the picture of what a young Jamaican woman of my complexion could become. She was a successful lawyer. She was running the program. She was well-spoken, and she was an advocate. Anytime anything went wrong in school, if a teacher, you know, blindsided me when I was graduating high school, they told me that I couldn't get into any of the colleges I was applying to. She was like, please, we have no time for that. We're not listening to them. She got me waivers to apply to all the schools that I needed to apply to because my parents didn't have the money. I mean, she was definitely like, without her, I don't think I would have made it to college. And then that also leads throughout my high school year. I had two track coaches, Cornell Johnson and Howard Langley. They believed in me, like point blank. They saw me and they're like, you're a leader, you're going places, and you're going to be somebody. And it's such a good feeling when an adult, once again, and they were Jamaican, so that helps. And then seeing, you know, people of Jamaican heritage doing such great things really, really encouraged me. And their words of affirmation did a lot for me. So now for the negative teacher, I did have an eighth grade teacher. He was racist. He was. And he was really mean to the classmates. And one day I took him to task and I was like, why are you so mean? Like, why are you doing that? You're supposed to lift us up. And, you know, he actually told me, he said, sit down, you black dog, and shut up. And it's so crazy. I decided that I was going to be somebody and go back to that school and prove him wrong. Like, he told me I would never be anything. And I wanted to shut him up. And I have a good friend who was in the class with me, Bridget. Ryan, you know her. She was in the class and she experienced a lot of his hatred as well. And it's so crazy. Like, when she graduated from college, she was like, Christine, we should go to the middle school and show him our diplomas. It's like, it impacted her as well. Like, when we get together, we still speak about the hatred of that guy, but we turned it around. And you know that it's, most students can't do that. Like, that would just deflate them. But we were able to turn it around and say, we wanted to prove him wrong. Like, how dare he? I did answer him. I won't tell you what I said because I do have a smart mouth and it did not end well. Parents were called in. I took him to task, but I also told him, you're going to see, I'm going to be somebody and you're going to feel real stupid. So those are the individuals that I definitely attribute, you know, where I am today because of their influence in my life.
So can you give us an example of a way that you have impacted one of your students?
Wow, that's hard because I don't tend to look for how I'm impacting my students. And I know that's probably really crazy. I tend to see how my students impact me. And so the most memorable story that I have that I think I'll never, ever forget, and in him impacting me, I believe I impacted him. It was time to take the state exams. It was a fifth grade class and I had a student, you know, and I had told them, you guys are smart, you can do it, you got this, we're going to show them everything you know, kind of thing. And, you know, I was still a pretty young teacher. And the state exam was handed out and I was walking around the room just to encourage them. And he raised his hand. And when I walked over to him, he was crying. Tears were just pouring out of his eye. And I was like, baby, what's wrong? What's happening? And he was like, I thought you loved us. And I said, you know, I love you. Why would you say that? He said, there's no way you love me. And you put this test in front of me. And you know I can't read. And I was like, my heart broke. Just a real quick backstory is that I'm a special education teacher. So we didn't mention that at the top of the program. But special education students are required to take the same exams as general education students, regardless of their disability, unless they fall into a category of alternate assessment. And he was not an assessment student. He was a student who was supposed to sit and take the regular exam. And the impact that had on me So I misspoke. Sorry. That was fourth grade because I had him for fourth and fifth. And so for fifth grade, I was determined that when they got that test before them in May, none of them were going to cry. They weren't going to feel that way. So we started reading skills. I mean, the first day of school and test prep, and we drilled and we drilled and we drilled. And I remember when he got the test the next year, he didn't cry. He was like, Mrs. Davy, my maiden name, I could do this. I could read this. I could understand it. You do love us. You do. So in him crying and telling me that I put this test before him that I hadn't properly prepared him for, it changed the way I instructed students. And then the next year, he was able to approach the test better. And he continued to visit me. Like after he graduated, he always came back and was like, I just came to say hi, Mrs. Davy, and give you a hug. And he would show me his report cards. And, you know, that was a wonderful thing. Like, it felt good to help him be prepared for an exam.
Wow. Okay. So do you have any closing words for anyone who might want to be an educator?
Whew, I have a lot of words. I would say the first thing I would say is make sure you're doing it for the right reason. You're not going in there to fix kids and save children, right? You're going in there to be yourself. And by being yourself, if you're loving and you care, they will know that. Students will sniff that out and they will automatically be drawn to you, and you'll have the impact that you need. Also, I would say, you know, just be mindful of, this is a big pet peeve of mine. Parents do care. They may care in different ways and it may look different, but there is no parent that gives birth to a child and holds that precious baby in their hand and looks at the baby and says, I don't care about you. Like, that just doesn't happen. And that's a huge misconception, especially in urban and lower SES communities, that parents don't care. And that's the furthest thing from the truth. Because people could have thought that my parents didn't care when I was younger with my behavior. But culturally, I know for us in the Caribbean, teachers are the experts. So when we send our students to school, we're trusting that you're going to do whatever you can, whatever is best. We defer to you. You're the one helping us. So when you don't see us showing up all the time, it doesn't mean that we don't care. It means our level of trust is so high in you that we believe you have it under control. So that's the second thing, that, you know, parents do care. And the third thing is, remember, all kids can learn. They can learn, they deserve to learn, and you should hold high expectations for all of your learners. Don't water down your expectations for students. They will rise to your expectations when they know you believe that they can do it. And, you know, it's a rewarding profession. Like I said, there's nothing else I'd rather be doing than teaching. And I love it. Every day, I love standing before my students. I love working with them. I love learning from them. And it's been a wonderful ride since 1999.
Wow, Christine, you're very inspirational. I think your students will be very proud to have you as a teacher. Thank you for joining us today at the What a Word podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. You guys have a great afternoon. Hope to see you soon again.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.